Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We come to you every week around our kitchen table here, right in the middle of the studios of KHOI Community Radio in Ames, Iowa. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. Thank you for being with us today. And thanks all of you out there who support KHOI Community Radio. It's good things for your ears. And the Donalana Kitchen has been bringing you good thoughts from the kitchen since, oh heavens, since like 2015. Some people ask where our ideas come from, and we haven't run out of anything to talk about yet, have we?
Well, food is a rather large and engrossing subject for almost everybody, so we're not too constrained here.
We are good. Yes, we are. I have a short announcement for an event coming up here at the studio this Friday, December 9th, 7 p.m., live and in person. We're going to have an author, Beth M. Howard, the author of many books about pies, and she's on our show here today. This Friday, there's going to be an author spotlight in coordination and cooperation with the Ames Writers Collective. So, Friday, December 9th, come here to the studio. We've got great space for this. Pie will be served. Today, we're going to talk about pies, and we have a good idea of what pies are going to be like, because not only pies just as a thing to eat, but Beth Howard is an Iowa author, that has made it her business to take pies up and out of the kitchen and does a whole lot of other things with them, too. She has traveled around the world. Beth Howard is the author of the memoirs, Hausfrau Honeymoon, Making Peace, P-I-E-C-E, A Memoir of Love, Loss, and Pie, and the cookbook Ms. American Pie. She rose to fame in the Midwest, where she lived in the iconic American Gothic House in Eldon, Iowa, where she ran the Pitchfork Pies stand from 2010 to 2014. And we're going to also talk about her new book. It's called World Peace, A Pie Baker's Global Quest for Peace, Love, and Understanding. Welcome, Beth.
Hi, thank you for having me, both of you.
Good. Well,
but my first question is, how did you get to live in the American Gothic House?
Good question.
Well, I was visiting my birthplace of Ottumwa, Iowa, in 2010, right after I had been a pie judge at the Iowa State Fair, by the way, which is always fun to talk about. And I was just visiting Ottumwa and leaving town, and I thought, well, I'm never going to be back here again. That was nice to visit. I had been sending pictures to my family. And I made it just a few miles down the road, and I saw a sign for the American Gothic House. And I had grown up in Ottumwa, but I never knew that the Gothic House was there, first of all, but I never even knew that it was a real house. You know, we all know the painting, the Grant Wood painting of the couple with the pitchfork, that's internationally known, but that house and the painting is real, and it's owned by the State Historical Society of Iowa, and at the time I stopped by and fell in love with it, it was for rent. So I was like, that would be kind of interesting to live there. It was so adorable, and it was so peaceful there, and that was really just calling to me. So I inquired, and the next thing you know, I'm moving in, and everyone in my whole life was shocked, especially my mom. She's like, what are you going to do there? What are you going to do in the winter? And I just, well, lo and behold, I started baking pies, and then that just took off and became the Pitchfork Pie Stand, and you know that story. So,
oh, how nice. How nice. Well, I think that's a wonderful idea. Grant Wood, the artist, has done a lot to give a vision to what the past of Iowa used to look like, and some people think we still look like that, but
well, some places we do.
we've moved on a little bit. And yes, like you, Beth, I thought the picture, I knew there was really a place where that was painted, but I thought it was just, currently I thought it was just kind of a prop behind people so they could take pictures, but I'm so glad you got to live there. And pies. You mean people would come in and you would sell them whole pies or pieces of, or what?
Well, the first time I thought about doing this, I was like, well, look at all these tourists coming and there's nothing for them here. So I thought, well, I'm a pie maker. I'm looking for something to do. I thought I would set up a little table in the side yard, like a lemonade stand, and just sell pie by the slice. And, you know, then I think I made 10 pies for my first pie stand, and I didn't think anybody was going to come and buy them. And what happened was people wanted to buy whole pies, not just slices. So then it just grew from there. And also, I didn't stay in the side yard. I moved my pie stand into the living room of the house because Iowa weather, it can be rather unpredictable. And the winds kick up, and the next thing you know, you're chasing napkins all across the lawn. And bees love pies, so the bees were swarming around my table, and, you know, so it worked out really well to move it inside the house, and then that way people got to glimpse inside the house as well, because at that point it wasn't open to the public.
Ah, very good. So, tell us about your latest book and your adventures. It's not just a book. You circumnavigated the globe. So, how did that come about?
I lost my husband in 2009. He was from Germany, and he traveled a lot for his work, and he had gained 420,000 frequent flyer miles, and I inherited them when he passed away. And I'd always wanted to use those miles to go around the world, and I always wanted to go around the world making pie. After reading this book, it was a children's book called How to Make an Apple Pie and See the World by Marjorie Priceman. And I thought that was such a great title. And I was like, what a great idea. I don't want to just go around the world and, see the world. I want to change the world. So the frequent flyer miles were going to expire. And I had just moved out of the American Gothic house. And, you know, it just, like, the timing was just never right to do it. But the miles were expiring. So for about 48 hours before the miles expired, I just went ahead and booked my trip. And thanks to social media, I got invitations from people in a whole bunch of different countries, more countries than I had the time to go to. And there it was. I packed up my rolling pin and my roller bag, and off I went to New Zealand, Australia, Thailand, India, Lebanon, Greece, Switzerland, Hungary, and also to Germany, which is, again, where my husband was from. And you know, part of the idea was maybe to have some closure with that grieving process while also teaching pie everywhere I went, teaching people how to make pie. And pie is this really great way to get invited into people's homes. If you say you're going to offer to make pie with them and teach them how to make American pie like the way we make it, they're like, yeah, come on over. And they'll invite other people. And next thing you know, you've got this whole, you know, cross-cultural exchange going on. It's really lovely.
Right. And you don't have to speak the language. It's demonstration.
Right. Yeah. Pie is a universal language.
Speaks
and
for
pie
itself.
Is not American. Pardon me?
I said it speaks for itself, doesn't it?
Speaks for itself. Well, people love working with their hands and making something. And they, you know, this whole process of rolling dough and seeing it come together and building up and crimping the crust and then seeing it come out of the oven all baked and boiling and brown, you know, it just, people get excited about it no matter what country you're in. And I had seen that happen even before I went around the world. So I knew that this was like a tried and true concept, that I had made pies in South Africa with kids in a township, and I had made pies in Tokyo with business people who didn't speak any English. So I knew that, well, I figured this would work, you know. Did it create world peace? You know, that perhaps was a bit of a lofty goal, but it was a great way to bridge some, you know, bridge some, not necessarily divides, but, you know, it's just a great way to connect with people.
Well, food does connect with people. I do have to ask you this. You said you packed up your rolling pin. Did you have any trouble with airport security when that showed up on the airport security scanners?
I was packing my checked baggage.
Oh, very good.
I didn't have any trouble. But I have traveled. I have checked pies through security, and they're allowed.
Well, Donna, that's good to know. That's good to know.
Well, so what?
I'm always double-checking, though, before I get on a flight with a pie. I'm always like, okay, that hasn't changed, has it? So I need to double-check. But
what kind of pies did you usually make in your far-flung travels?
So mostly apple. Mm-hmm. When I was in Lebanon, my host, she had a whole basket of apricots from her own orchard that were sitting on her table, and she asked me if I'd make an apricot pie because the fruit needed to be used. And in other places, mostly apple, because you can get apples everywhere in the world. You can get butter everywhere in the world. You cannot get Crisco everywhere in the world, mind you. So most of my pie crusts were straight butter crust. Normally when I make a pie, I do half butter, half Crisco, because the Crisco keeps it light, but the butter gives it the nice taste.
You said you started in New Zealand, and why did you start in New Zealand?
Well, one guy that I had talked to who had been around the world before, it was his suggestion that I start going in the westerly direction rather than going to Europe first, go west. And I probably would not have gone to New Zealand. I wanted to go to some of the more exotic places, exotic as in, like, there's no way I'll ever learn the language, or, you know, the food being so completely different than what we're used to, the European style food. So it wasn't top of my list, but there was a woman who had invited me to stay there, and also they grow apples there. It's a very big apple growing country. So I thought, well, I'll check out where they grow Aunt Granny Smith apples, which are the apples I use in my pies. And that's what I ended up doing. I visited a fifth generation apple orchard, and then they donated 3 cases of apples for me to go teach a pie class to 20 people down in Napier, New Zealand. So that was kind of a nice, like, win-win. And I learned a lot about apples, and too much information to retain, but now when I go to the grocery store, it's always fun to see varieties that I did learn about when I was in New Zealand that they do sell here in the U.S., like Jazz and Sweet Tango, and just learning about where apples come from. A lot of them came from Minnesota and Washington, the ones that they grow in New Zealand, you know, some of these varieties. So that could be a whole subject on itself, is apples. But
oh, yes. So tell us about...
I just use them for pie.
Oh, good. So tell us about some of there are other bakers, other cooks around the world. Did you meet any interesting people in the kitchen?
Well, I did. In India, I stayed with a woman named Deepa Krishnan, and she has a company called Mumbai Magic Tours, and part of that is food tours. And because I stayed in her home, she showed me how they make, you know, various Indian foods. I honestly cannot even pronounce the names. And, you know, there were, there's like the ingredients that,
Wrong. Asafoetida. See, I can't even roll that off my tongue. Yes.
Exactly.
It's difficult.
And the curries and rolling out dough. And, like, again, it was – I'm not really necessarily a foodie. You know, I love making pie, but people mistake me for a pastry chef. And I don't even consider myself a pastry chef. I'm just like, no, I really like pie, and I like the meaning of pie. You know, it's almost more about the metaphor of what pie is and what it can – what message it can convey to people rather than the actual recipes and – but, you know, my goal was to try pies from each country I went to, because almost every country has some form of pie. Like, you know, Italy has pizza and calzone, and in India, like, I would consider samosa a kind of pie, because it's something encased in a crust.
Well, in New Zealand, a pie is actually a savory, like in the British tradition, a savory-filled, usually meat pies, they call them.
Right. In New Zealand, it was all about the meat pies, mm-hmm. and they're small, canned pies, mm-hmm. and they're sort of a snack food, basically. There's a lot of people eat it when they come home from the bar, like the way we would do a burger and fries or pizza. You know, that's like kind of their fast food in a way. And then in Australia, the Cornish pasty is very popular. It's the, you know, the beef, or I guess you'd call it steak, steak and potato and turnip, and that's pretty much it. And that's like a turnover style pie.
Ha! Huh. That's good. Yeah, I was thinking, most countries would have something that is encased in a crust of sorts.
Flour.
Like, yeah.
Flour-based.
Yeah, I was thinking of, in Greece, there's spanakopita. Is that a Greek
right.
thing?
Mm-hmm.
Which is
yes.
spinach pie. And that's phyllo dough, and I don't even attempt phyllo dough. That's a whole other level there. But there it is.
I don't attempt phyllo dough either, and I had never worked with it until I wrote my book, World Peace. And I have recipes in the back of the book, and several of them called for phyllo dough. And from all the research I'd done, people said, don't even try to make it yourself. You know, it's a very, it can be difficult, and it's kind of a learned skill. And as it turns out, you can buy frozen phyllo dough, and it's actually really easy to work with, and it's delicious. And it's like this tissue paper thin layers that you brush butter in between each layer. And I made the Hungarian strudel using the store-bought phyllo dough, and oh my god, it came out of the oven and we just pounced on it. We just couldn't wait to eat it. It was so good.
See, things like this do contribute to world peace, I must say. Talk more about pie as metaphor.
Well, I mean, what does pie mean to you, right? Doesn't it mean like comfort and kindness and family and love and nostalgia and generosity? It's community. Like, you know, if you have a bake sale, that's a community thing. And, you know, pie just shows up in all kinds of ways like that, that it's, it brings people together. People's eyes light up when they see a pie, a homemade pie. When you bring a homemade pie to a dinner party, it's like everybody just gets so excited about it. And, you know, there's something also about taking the time to make a homemade pie where you're giving something of yourself to share with others. So for me, it's mostly about the sharing. It's about taking time to make something with love and share it with somebody else to make them happy. And that in turn makes you happy. And that is a recipe for world peace, in my opinion.
In my experience, actually, as well. I like that. I like that. Yes. People connect with food all over the place.
Well, you know, and I totally agree with you that a handmade pie, home-baked pie, or mostly home baking, is always a treasure. It's because, I mean, you can obviously buy all of these things at bakeries, but they are very, very rarely the same as a homemade baked good. And there's obvious reasons for it. Something about the handwork involved. You can't really replicate that with a pie machine, and there are pie machines. You know, most of the baked goods that you see in the supermarket are, you know, you set that next to a homemade pie, everybody knows the difference. It's just, it's a lovely thing to bring something that, cannot be gotten by, for money.
True. Let's talk about pie crust, Beth. Everybody's got a version of pie crust, and I noticed in the video that I watched, you encourage people to use their fingers. Tell people about how you make a pie crust.
Well, I do use my hands, that's true, and you'll see a lot of recipes that call for a food processor, and I just bristle at the words food processor. I think that, you know, the pioneers made pie, right? They didn't have electricity. They didn't have refrigerators. They certainly did not have food processors. Your two best tools are your hands. And when they say that, oh, you know, using your hands is going to make your pie dough tough, that's not the problem. Like, when I mix the dough, I'm blending in the the butter with the flour. I'm massaging it just with my fingertips. I'm not kneading it like bread. So it's about keeping a light touch and working quickly, because it really doesn't take as long as people think it does to make pie dough. And, you know, the mistake people often make is that they just want to keep working it, and they want to force it to hold together without adding the water that it takes to hold it together. So I also don't follow the recipe when it says, you know, only add 5 tablespoons of water and one at a time. That's just, to me, that's rubbish. You know, I drizzle water in and toss it around until I can feel that everything's well moistened and holding together on its own. And then I'll do what I call a squeeze test to see. So I'm not using force to hold the dough together. I let the water do the work. So that's my little trick. And that's, I know for a fact that that advice has helped a lot of people get over this thing, because 5 tablespoons of water is often not enough, because maybe it depends on your, you know, your brand of flour, your environment that you're living in, the humidity, you know. So there's so many variables. You can't say precisely how much water your pie dough is going to need. And
what temperature do you
water? Pardon me?
What temperature do you keep your butter at to start with?
I just keep it in the refrigerator.
Do you take it straight out of the fridge cold?
I do.
Okay.
So chilled butter. And I store my Crisco in the refrigerator as well. Some people go over the top, and in my opinion, and refrigerate their flour. They refrigerate their bowl. They just like everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't need to complicate it that much. It's not all required, you know. So the butter should be chilled, yes, and ice water is really crucial, and just working quickly and lightly. It's not about having everything at some precise temperature. And, you know, they talk about baking being about precision, but pie does not fall into that category.
Well,
I cannot stress enough, you know, the pioneers made pie. Just remember that, you know, keep that in perspective, that we've complicated our lives, and we've complicated even our baking and all the little gadgets that come with it. And it's just, none of that is necessary.
Well, our bodies, our fingers and our eyes and our noses can tell us a whole lot about what to do in the kitchen. Yes. Lard, what's your concept on lard as a shortening?
So, as I said, I was a pie judge at the Iowa State Fair.
Aha.
And I had some, they required to submit the recipe along with the pie so the judges can see what the ingredients are. So I had some pies with lard that were like the worst pies I've ever had. Like, they tasted like bacon grease. Just, it was really not pleasant at all. However, one of my favorite pies I ever had was a peach pie made with a lard crust. And what it comes down to is the freshness of your lard. Where do you get your lard? Lard can go rancid, and so I think you just have to be really careful with lard. I think it's less shelf stable than Crisco. So I would use it, but it's just easier for me to use Crisco.
Yeah, it's good to work with what you have. I love baking pies, and my recipe for pies is usually half butter, half lard, and I agree it has to be good quality lard. I think it's good stuff myself.
Where do you get your lard?
The food co-op here has lard in, not all the time. You have to kind of snatch it up when they have rendered lard.
There's some local farmers too that sell it. You know, in the last 10 or more years, there has been better lard available as more farmers are doing some direct marketing and things like that. I mean, 15 years ago, most of the lard, or 20 years ago, most of the lard that you would buy at the supermarket is not lard that I would recommend. But it's more and more good quality lard is available, especially here in Iowa. We have a lot of pigs.
Yes, we do. Well, I want to take this opportunity to say that this is KHOI Community Radio. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Stick around for more. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking to Beth Howard, a woman who can teach us a lot about pies and world peace. She traveled the world talking about pies, making pies all over the world with people that she met. I can't think of a better thing to do. It's one thing to go to a country and stay in a nice hotel, perhaps, and look at the scenery and take pictures, but actually interacting with people. What a good idea. We were talking about pie crusts. I'm going to throw a little bit of my pie crust recipe ingredients at you and see what you think. Along with using usually half and half lard, good quality lard, and butter. I don't know where I learned to do this, but along with the ice water, I put in a beaten egg into the crust. And I don't know where that came from. I've been doing it for ages, and it seems to work out well. It seems that the proteins in the egg would hold things together. Anyway, what do you think of that? Have you ever heard of using an egg?
Oh, yeah, sure. And I have a friend down where I live in Donelson, Esther Tweedy, and her pie is so incredibly good. I get so excited when she makes a pie for me, and I've got the recipe from her. It's her grandmother's recipe. It has egg. It also has vinegar. So it's the flour, the butter, the shortening or lard, and the egg, and also vinegar. So I love her pie crust so much, but for whatever reason, I have been too lazy, I guess, to even make the recipe that way myself, because I'm just so used to doing it my way with the simple, you know, fewer ingredients. But now that we've talked about it, I'm going to make that my goal.
Try it.
Try the pie recipe. Now, I have made a gluten-free pie crust that calls for egg, because that is the binder that holds it together without the gluten. And I found that to taste very eggy. So, I mean, it didn't taste bad. It was actually quite good, but the egg, it did have a very strong egg taste to it. So that would be my only hesitation. But anyway, now they make one-to-one gluten-free flour. So you don't have to do anything differently than with a regular pie crust or pie dough. It's just you replace the flour with the one-to-one gluten-free flour, and you're good. And it won't roll out the same way that a regular gluten pie crust will, but it's something that people have been asking me about a lot lately. I thought I'd mention that.
Very good.
You don't need an egg for that. But maybe you could. Maybe you could, with that one-to-one, you could try that with your recipe with the egg.
Huh?
So
It would.
Do you use the whole egg, not just the white or the yolk?
I use the whole egg. And because I have my own chickens, there's always a small egg. You know, my eggs come in different sizes. So I tend to use a small egg. I don't want a big egg for a recipe. So there you go. And, yeah, eggs are handy.
Beth, do you have an opinion about sugar in the crust? In French pastry, they often put a little sugar in their tart crusts.
So I like it. I don't have it in my recipe, but lately I've been finding myself throwing in like a tablespoon or two, maybe.
Not too much. Yeah.
I don't measure. I just toss in like a little, scoop up a little with my hand and throw it in, but it's probably 1 to 2 tablespoons. Mm-hmm. And I do like it in my crust, but I don't have it written in my recipe, and I didn't even have it in my cookbook as an option, but I kind of regret that because I do like how it tastes with the sugar. But the thing about that pie crust is when it's just that basic recipe, you can use it for a sweet or savory pie. Mm-hmm. So I certainly wouldn't add the sugar in the pie dough for a savory pie.
Well, what kind of pie is going to be at your Christmas table?
At my Christmas table?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can tell you that for the first time in my life, for my Thanksgiving table, I made a French silk pie. So I usually would make apple, pecan, and pumpkin. But this year, the other shocker was I only made one pie because we were hosted by my partner's family, and they're all pie makers. So I got off the hook this year. So for Christmas, I don't know. I always love apple pie. That's always, like, my go-to. It's just so yummy and comforting and gooey, and I just love apple pie. So probably I'll do some apple pie, and I wouldn't be surprised if I end up doing another French silk because that's very popular in our house.
Tell us your French silk pie recipe.
Yes, go for it.
Well, so now that recipe came straight from the Iowa State Fair from Lana Shope. Do you know who she is? She's in Indianapolis. She is a pie cooperative that you can sign up and get a pie a week or a month or something. I'm not quite sure how it works. She is the most amazing pie maker, and she had a French silk pie entered in the at the fair, and it was by far my favorite pie. And she uses lard in her crust, by the way. And so I have her recipe. It's in my cookbook, Ms. American Pie. I think you also can find it on my website. And it's, you know, of course, the raw eggs and the baker's chocolate. You know, you use a full bar of the baker's chocolate melted, not sweetened, and sugar. And the thing that is hard for me to make that is the patience that it takes to wait to mix it for 5 minutes. Each, with the addition of each egg, you have to keep beating it for 5 minutes before you add the next one. And then it's refrigerated, and you pre-bake the crust, you know, blind bake the crust. But her recipe was so good, and I argued for her pie to get first place for the blue ribbon, and nobody would listen to me, so she got second place for that pie. But I still say, to this day, she deserved the blue ribbon for that pie. One of my favorites.
Ooh, good, good, good. Pies can, and then there's, did it have a meringue on the top?
No, whipped cream.
A whipped cream? Well, then. See, I love baking pies, but I tend to steer away from meringues. I don't know why. So, oh, my goodness, I don't know. That may be my thing to try. Oh, I'll see if I can try.
Oh, it's
good
true, Lana. You can do a meringue.
Well.
Especially with your eggs.
Well, you do great meringues.
All right, you make the pie, and I'll come over and we'll make a lemon meringue pie. For Christmas.
Ha, see?
Well, all you do, you start with a clean bowl. Mm-hmm. That's the key.
Dry, clean. Yeah.
Present. And then your egg whites, of course, and then a little cream of tartar. And you just, if you have a hand, I do it with my hand mixer, and I have done it several times by hand with a hand.
Whoa.
Mixer. Great workout.
Whoa.
Great workout for your arm muscles. It's not really that hard. I think the secret is just keeping everything so clean when you start. Your beaters, make sure nothing has any grease on it.
So, and then the heat. What you put it in a hot, a slow, a what kind of oven?
I do usually a hot. Like I think maybe I do. I don't even know. 375. I think I've got variations on what I do with my meringues, but the main thing is to keep a close eye on it.
It goes fast,
Baking time could vary. It could take you 5 minutes. It could take you 10 minutes. You have to keep an eye on it. And the other thing that I will say, that my meringue weeps, you know, it gets those little...
Well, this is Iowa.
Well, and I just go, you know what? So what? Just eat it. Eat it faster. So you don't have... It doesn't have time to have the drops form on the top.
Yeah, it's
nobody cares about that. It's not
it's the humidity.
I did have one woman in southern Iowa tell me that she adds a little cornstarch along with the cream of tartar get her meringue to keep it from weeping.
Ha!
I have tried that and it still wept, so whatever. Who cares? I'm not a perfectionist anyway. And honestly, people don't care. They love that you made a homemade pie. They get excited. They see a meringue and their eyes light up. Come on. It's like, you can't go wrong.
Oh, that's wonderful. Good. Let's talk about some pie recipes. Apple pie is kind of the quintessential, of course, but there's so many sweet and savory. There's hand pies, there's tarts, and you mentioned samosas are a pie of sorts. With the holiday coming up, Donna's got a few words to say about mincemeat.
Well, I was going to bring up mincemeat because it's sort of like, this is how I look at mincemeat. First of all, the stuff that you buy in the can that most Americans eat that make mincemeat pies, as my mother always made for Christmas, it's rather not really mincemeat. It's too sweet, it's too sticky, it's too gooey. So if this is the year that you feel like you have time, that you want to do a special Christmas project, mincemeat, it's either that or fruitcake. Those two are the things you kind of do in advance, you make in advance, because mincemeat is better if it kind of cures and all the flavors marry from anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. So I've looked up a few very British recipes, and you have to remember that it's called mincemeat because in England, hamburger, as we call it, is called mince. It's chopped ground beef. So I've got the Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall book here, and he talks about he uses beef and suet. Some recipes only call for, so suet is beef fat. It's the kind of, you know, that you put out for the birds around here, basically. So in Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, he says he grinds his beef himself and he uses, a good lean with no sinews. He says he likes to buy braising or chuck and trim it and, as he says, mince it himself. So it's beef and then some of the suet, which you also kind of grind up, and you could use the food processor for that part, okay, especially for the suet. And then...
Well, that I would make an exception.
Yes, right. It's not the crust. It's not the crust. It's just, you know, you're making the filling for the pie. And then it's a lot of fruit and raisins and, you know, almonds and a lot of things that you would use in a fruit cake, which I also sometimes make for Christmas, which I love. And like, for example, Lana and I have started the Christmas season baking already. This weekend, I made my candied orange peel, which once I make that, I go, okay, what am I going to put it in? Because there's so many options. But the making your own candied peel is not that difficult. It just takes a little bit of time. And it's absolutely not comparable to the kind of candied citrus peel that you buy at the grocery store. So I would recommend, even if you're only going to make, cover it in chocolate or something and make little candies out of it, it's really fun. You just, I juice my oranges first and save the juice. And then you throw the peels into some boiling water and you boil them for 10 minutes, then you throw the water off, and then I actually go in and scrape the excess pulp out of the inside of the orange, and then you boil them again, and you boil them from 3 to 5 times, changing the water each time, because you're getting some of the bitterness out of the oranges and softening them up. And at some point in the boiling process, you start to cut them into little pieces, and then you boil them some more, and then eventually you put them back in with the orange juice and some extra sugar, and then you just boil that down until it's evaporated. And then I spread them out on a cookie sheet and let them dry in the air for a couple of days to get them to firm up. And you can also add more powdered sugar along the way. So starting with your own citrus peel is a good base for either mincemeat or fruitcake. And then the other ingredients are currants, raisins, tart eating apples, which would be your Granny Smith's or whatever you can find, brown sugar, almonds, ginger, zest from lemon and juice from orange, zest and juice from both. And then they have something they're calling ground mixed spice. Well, I had to look that up because, you know, that's not the same in America as it is in England. So apparently they do say it's similar to what you would use for gingerbread spice or pumpkin spice. So it includes cinnamon, allspice, nutmeg, and or mace. I'm loving mace these days. So mace is the outer covering of the nutmeg.
Ah.
And it's very nutmeggy flavored, but it's slightly more delicate and a little more, like I made, it's eggnog season also. So this year I made some eggnog to kind of get a trial run going here. And I used mace instead of nutmeg. It's really good. And then cloves, ginger, and of course, ground coriander seed. So you mix all of these things together, the fruits and the nuts and the spices, and cook them down, and then at the end you add rum, brandy, or Calvados.
Ha!
And then you pot it up and let it sit for at least 2 weeks. You also, I want you to know, you can make it without the beef in it if you want to. In the Nigella Lawson book, How to Be a Domestic Goddess, she has something she calls Hetty Potter suet free mincemeat. So that is another option. But you know, that sounds like a good holiday treat.
Yeah.
Just don't use the canned stuff.
Right. Is it served warm?
You had me worried. You had me worried when you were saying that you make a 2 to 4 weeks in advance, and I was like, how is the pie crust going to, you know, stand up that long? But now I get it. You just make the filling.
You make the filling. Sorry, I should have called. Thank you very much for that.
Clarify that.
Yes.
Is it served warm or cold?
I think you could do either way.
Ah.
I mean, you know, we usually... It's hard to have a hot pie on Christmas because you're making so many other things usually.
Ah, very good. Well, Beth, you had such wonderful travels, and you traveled the world interacting with pies and teaching people things. What did you learn from some of the people that you visited? What other kind of pies did you encounter around the world?
Well, like the Cornish pasty for sure was something, actually, that was something new to me that I hadn't had before. And, you know, that has a whole history and story about how it came over from with the miners when they immigrated to Australia. So, you know, sometimes it's not even just the pie itself that's interesting, but it's the story behind it. Let's see. Well, in Lebanon, I had so many different kinds of flatbread pies, and they have, like, they're savory, and they have a za'atar is the spice. So it could be as simple as just like a flatbread with olive oil and sprinkled with this spice, which is sage and, is it sage and thyme? And
marjoram.
Seeds. Yeah.
Marjoram and thyme, usually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really tasty and so simple. And there were other sort of forms of that. There were some meat pies that I had at an Armenian bakery in Lebanon. There's a big Armenian community there. So one of them was also this beautiful thing, and the name of it escapes me. I know it's in my book. That's why I write, so I can remember stuff. I can go back and look it up again. But they were this, like, little pinwheel things of nuts, all put together, like, you know how you make cinnamon rolls in a round pan?
And so they're
all,
sweet. Like,
yeah, that's a sweet one. It's nuts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really beautiful. I didn't have a chance to try to learn how to make it. I don't even know if I could. But there are recipes online for those kinds of things. And in Greece, I had so badly wanted to have pie, but I had food poisoning when I got there, and I got to eat nothing except for rice, white rice.
Oh, you have to go back. Oh, my goodness.
I will absolutely go back. I will make a point to go back. So I didn't get to try the spanakopita or the honey goat cheese pies. And, you know, they do have a lot of different kinds of pies there. So, and then, of course, in Europe, they have all these tarts, you know, the plum tarts and apple tarts and cherry and all kinds of really delicious.
Well, tell us about the Swiss baking.
Swiss baking. So one of the most popular Facebook posts and recipes, and in fact, when I did my book launch party for World Peace at the American Gothic House in October, the first pies to go wasn't really a pie necessarily. It was an apple wrapped in dough. And when I was in Switzerland, my friend's mother taught me how to make this. They call it apple in a bathrobe. And you know how we have dumplings where you wrap the dough around a whole apple, you pour the apple and you fill it with, you know, cinnamon and sugar and butter and whatever. They do that, but it's its own thing. So they make them like just individually, whereas we make dumplings in like a casserole dish with all kinds of gooey caramel sauce. They don't go overboard with the sugar in Europe. which I actually appreciate. So,
you core the apple and stuff it, and then wrap the pie dough around it.
Yes.
So there is some sugar in the stuffing.
Just pour it down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So sugar, cinnamon. She used almond meal.
Ooh.
They recommend it,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit of cream,
mm-hmm.
liquid cream, pour it down the middle, and butter. So you just pack it full, and then it just bakes. And you know, we ate those in Switzerland. I had made apple pies, but we also had the apple in a bathrobe, and everybody unanimously loved the apple in a bathrobe. And then at the American Gothic House book launch party, the apple in a bathrobe, those were the first things that people went for on the table out of all the pies available. So it's just been so interesting. And even on my social media posts when I was traveling, that apple in a bathrobe was one of the most popular posts from my entire trip around the world. And it's just so simple. It's like I actually, when I have leftover pie dough when I'm making apple pies, and if I have leftover apples too, then I'll make a couple of apple in a bathrobe. Just bake those separately, and those are just really fun to hand out because they're individual serving, and you can just, you know, that's a nice thing to be able to share with people. You could wrap it up. Actually, that would make a great Christmas present, kind of, you know, Christmas giveaway thing if you're looking to drop off something at someone's house with a card or, you know, like a, instead of cookies, you know, just do a couple little apples.
So tell me the visual of it. Do you roll out like a round piece of dough and then crimp it at the top and close it around the apple?
Yes.
Or yeah.
Yeah, just gather it and pinch it kind of close.
So it kind of pleats around the sides?
Yes, exactly, pleats. But I made them with some people once, and they did a little cookie cutter cut out of a heart or something and put it on the top of the pleats so that it actually was even more beautiful.
Decorative,
and,
right.
I hadn't thought about that, so that was cute. But yeah, you know, you can roll out a bigger piece of dough and then cut out like probably about the size of a dessert plate, bigger than a bread plate, but smaller than a dinner plate kind of thing. And, you know, you'll get a feel for it. And of course, you know, apples come in a variety of sizes, so I can't tell you precisely what size diameter your dough should be, but you'll figure that out. And, you know, it's been traditionally just they were made with the leftover dough, so it wasn't like its own thing, but it certainly can be. But yeah, just enough to like enclose the entire apple and have enough to pleat it at the top.
So those are probably
very, very simple.
Delicious right out of the oven, but they sit well too, so they would travel a little?
Yes, they do travel well.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. I love the name too. It's good. And you don't peel the apple, or you do peel the apple?
I do. I always peel my apples. And, you know, and particularly because I mostly bake with Granny Smith. And that's a tough, waxy skin. I would never put that kind of... I would never do that to the people who eat the pie. Like, oh, no, sorry. You don't
eat the peeling. It's good for you, yes.
I know the peeling is good for you, but I think on the Granny Smith, I would draw the line. But with other apples that have a, you know, softer, thinner skin, sure,
definitely.
Why not?
Good, good. This is KHOI. And, okay, we are talking to Beth Howard about her travels with pies and things. And you can find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen at khoifm.org. Welcome back. Well, Beth, this has been great. So, what is up for the future? You've got lots of books already, and heaven knows there's more pies to bake. What are you planning for your future?
Well, all I can do right now is focus on the present, which is promoting my book, World Peace. So because that question comes up, and then there's been times where I sort of panic, like, I don't know what's next. So then I've realized that all I need to say is right now I'm promoting my book, and we'll see. You know, I don't think I have another book in me right now. I think I might be turning my attention more to screenplay writing and also just kind of more more community baking effort to help bring the world together. So a little more focus on the kind of, you know, the community building behind the pie.
I also want to note that the title World Peace is World P-I-E-C-E. Which, just in case you're looking for it at the bookstore, right? Or the library.
Yeah. Also, we'll have an opportunity to meet Beth in person here this coming Friday at KHOI. We are downtown Ames, 622 Douglas Avenue. We're in a great big white house with a guitar on top of the spire up there. You can find us. It's a nice place. It is an event sponsored in cooperation with the Ames Writers Collective.
And it's at 7 p.m. So you can eat your dinner and come for dessert.
Ooh, that will be nice. That will be nice.
And I will be doing I'm going to be doing a pie demonstration of how I make my pie crust, and I will be making an entire apple pie, which will be given away to somebody in the audience afterwards to take home and bake.
So come for that. That's a good idea. Give us your contact information. Your website is lovely and has all kinds of information, including videos to watch, too. So give your information, Beth.
Right. My website is The World Needs More Pie, and I'm actually on social media pretty active on Facebook on my page called the same thing, The World Needs More Pie. So that's where you can find me on Instagram as well. But yeah, my website is a good place to start, and there are, like I said, a few recipes on there, and like you said as well, the videos and more information about my books and my TEDx talk about the healing powers of pie. And yeah, you're right. There's a lot on there.
Good. Well, thank you for being with us today, Beth, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on Friday in person.
Likewise. Thank
Very
you.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Very good. Well, thanks for your mincemeat advice, Donna. It was good.
Okay, I'll do the mincemeat if you try a meringue, okay?
I'll try a meringue. I think... I did a meringue once, and I didn't beat it enough, so it ended up being a white puddle.
Oh, yes. Well, it's like whipped cream. You got to go till it, as they say, you lift the beater out, and it makes a peak, and it holds the peak. Then you know you've done the right amount of beating.
See, so many little techniques, and there's people like Beth Howard that is out there improving people's lives by teaching us how to bake, because you can imagine, in all of these kitchens that she visited around the world, there are people sharing their advice with the person next to them. Remember this, remember that, I remember this recipe.
Well now I'm inspired to make the French silk pie.
I highly recommend it.
Okay.
it's very good, very good. Well, Donna, tell people the fact that we are available for listening on this fine radio station, but we have a podcast.
Yes, we do. We have a podcast called The Donna Lana Kitchen, and you can, wherever you listen to podcasts, if you just type in Donna Lana, is one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, kitchen, and then that's another really easy-to-access format. It's the same program that we do here on the radio station, too, so take your choice.
Yeah, that's good. Well, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you here on KHOI Community Radio, and thank you for supporting this radio station. Today we had music by the Barn Owl Band. You heard Mandelude. And also, we'll go out with a tune called Waltz de Petite Jeune Fille, the Waltz of the Little Girls. It's such a pretty thing. So grab your cat, grab your dog, and waltz around your kitchen table there. And listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen at noon on Tuesdays, repeated 7 p.m. on Tuesdays, or anytime at khoifm.org, or find us on a podcast. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
You've had fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.